eggshell in the larder. Even the cooking oil in the fryers was gone.
Probably used it in the Molotovs.
Peanut's the best.
Mildred was studying the pre-dark books on a wall shelf and pulled out a volume, only to put it right back. Damn, only operation manuals full of abort codes. Nothing interesting.
Any salt?
Christy rested a boot on an overturned ammo box, its side streaked with blood. The elderly man patted a lumpy pocket in his frock coat.
And some spices.
Mint?
The pinch.
Excellent. Means we won't be losing lunch on the next Mattrans jump.
Removing his wire-rimmed glasses and polishing them on the end of his shirt, J.B. studied the room.
Night creeps, eh? What did they think was so bastard precious down here?
The doubt itself.
Something's wrong. Let's check the top level. That's where we should find our answer.
Roger.
Check.
Sounds good.
Yes, sir.
Doc found the second elevator. It's in the south end, but I can't recommend using it. Too many traps around.
Take no chances. Shoot anything that moves. I'm on point, JB at the rear. Let's go.
The friends proceeded carefully upward. The door on the next level proved to be closed and locked, but with brilliant light seeping from underneath the jamb. After listening for a while, JB did his usual magic, and the door opened with a minimum of fuss. Inside was a standard military changing room, with most of the wall lockers standing ajar. They usually would have done a quick search. Many times they'd found amazing and often useful things that others left behind for no apparent reason. But the search would wait. The ceiling lights were abnormally bright, brutally illuminating the scene before them in monstrous clarity. A single wooden chair sat in the middle of the room, and sitting limply in it was a girl of no more than 10 or 12 years. Her head was tilted, her blonde hair streaked with red blood, and lying on the floor beside her was a smoking blaster. The seven friends advanced into the room, moving slowly as if mired in molasses. They had seen death hundreds of times, but that didn't make finding a dead child any easier.
Jack, JB.
Ryan jerked his rifle in different directions. The two men moved off to disappear around the standing rows of lockers. They reappeared a second later at the other end of the room and gave the clear signal. Dropping her med kit, Mildred knelt beside the girl and took a limp hand in her own. She pressed on the thumbnail and watched the results.
Dead no more than minutes. Skin is warm, blood is viscous, and lividity isn't present.
Minutes?
Still smoking.
Jack pointed to the blaster on the floor. Shifting his rifle, Ryan lifted the pistol. He cracked the cylinder. It contained six cartridges of assorted makes, one spent shell.
Barrel is warm. We just missed her.
Gaia, that must have been the odd noise we heard before. A gunshot muffled by the floors between us.
Makes sense.
Doc leaned against a closed locker.
Just skin and bones.
Check her numbers.
The physician brushed aside the bloody hair covering the neck.
Yes, her 11s are showing.
Everybody knew what that meant. They saw a lot of it in the nuke lands of America. When a person got close to death by starvation, the twin tendons at the back of the neck would begin to stand out prominently. It was the sure sign that death was only days, maybe hours away.
There was no food in the kitchen or in storage. No food anywhere that we've seen.
Her hair tightened fiercely about her face as Christy frowned.
Which means the only thing left to consume was...
the dead men. That's a choice few of us can make.
Rather die. Nia did once.
Yeah. A slug in the head sounds mighty good compared to long pig.
To consume the flesh of another human is a journey into bestiality that most of us simply cannot take, even if our own lives are forfeit.
Hot pipe!
Dean almost startled himself with the fervor of his cry. He moved his shoulders, making his bulky backpack rustle.
And here we are with a freaking ton of MREs only a floor away. Enough food for an army.
Ryan rested a hand on his son's shoulder.
Life is timing. A minute too soon is as bad as a second too late. Remember that.
Bowing her head, Christy began to say a short prayer to guide the child's spirit into the world beyond this. The others were respectfully quiet, but stayed alert during the brief ceremony. When Christy was done, Doc made the Christian sign of the cross and muttered something in Latin.
One girl, 20 or so men, the leader's child, a ransom victim?
Or the recreation officer. Mercies who kill their own usually don't waste time with fancy stunts like kidnapping.
Christy lifted the girl's stiffening arm.
Not a willing recreation officer. See the chain marks on the wrist?
That's why she didn't make a run for the door. The Coldhearts were bedamned slavers.
A former slave himself, Jack spoke with conviction.
Good they did.
Mildred stood and shuddered as if emerging from a river of ice.
The girl might have thought we were the others coming back.
To claim their prize.
Yes. To either rape her again or...
eat her?
Maybe both.
Sweet Jesus.
So she was what they were fighting over.
No, she wasn't. The prize was much more important than her.
He turned to face the second door across the room.
And we'll find it on the other side of that door.
Christy glanced at the closed portal.
How do you know?
Just a hunch. I think I know what this base is.
Rifle resting on his hip, Ryan loosened the Sig Sauer pistol in his belt and removed a grin from his pocket. Carefully, he removed the tape holding the spoon in place and put the primed bomb into his coat.
I'm on point.
Maybe we should just leave.
No. What's on the other side could be more valuable to us than it was to the Coldhearts.
Why?
Because we can use it.
Easing open the door, Ryan waited a moment for a reaction, then slipped through. JB at his heels, Christy close behind. Dean waited for the others to get a bit ahead of him before following. Then, on an impulse, he hurried back, retrieved the Ruger from the floor, and tucked it into his belt. What he planned to do with the weapon, Dean had no idea. But he felt angered over the girl's death, and was determined to find somebody or something to blame it on and get revenge. The next room proved to be the top floor of the redoubt, a single cavernous expanse stretching off for hundreds of yards ahead of them. Broken military machines of a dozen different sizes and shapes dotted the floor in rows upon rows. It was the motor pool. Dean's hopes soared at the sight. His father had told him how many were the times they found working APCs or Hummers, some even with caches of stored fuel and ammo. None of the vehicles ever lasted long, but while they did, the team rode in style and safety. Dodging past a row of vehicles he had once heard Mildred refer to as Jeeps, Dean slowed and scowled. The rest of the garage resembled a junkyard, with most of the machines in various stages of being totally disassembled, engines taken out, wheels off, axles bare of brakes and bearings, armor sheeting removed entirely, doors gone, weapon mounts empty.
Fuel pump!
Dean hurried in that direction to join Jack. The rest of the group was clustered around a stainless steel pair of pumps set near the massive ruin of an APC. Dean watched as JB worked the controls, and Jack held a hose hopefully over a bucket. Only vapor belched out.
Did you prime the pump?
This type doesn't need it. No, the storage tanks have already been drained. Too bad.
Any sign of that fancy condensed fuel?
None.
Wish to hell I knew what it was. It doesn't have the odor of regular gas, or leave a spectrum pattern on water like any normal petroleum product. Yet regular combustion engines run on it for hundreds of miles a gallon. It's something brand new.
Christy glanced around.
Not that there's anything here to fuel. This place is a machine graveyard, nothing but bits and pieces remaining.
Turning off the wheezing pump, JB removed his fedora and scratched his head.
Which makes no sense. Why rip apart every machine? Were they searching for a special part?
Maybe they had no idea what they were doing.
Doesn't appear so.
Ryan walked over to a tracked vehicle. The hood was completely gone, the engine compartment exposed to the bare overhead lights.
I spotted it as we passed. See? The engine's been removed, but the nuts on the mounting bolts were screwed back on. A trained mechanic does that, so as not to lose a nut. Not looters.
Probably taking parts from one to fix another. If so, then there could easily be a Hummer intact somewhere in a corner.
Yeah, highly doubtful, but we'll check.
I saw a big canvas lump over there behind us. Really huge. Could be anything.
Show us.
Dodging debris.